Hello, I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop, and this is the Meet Cute Book Pod. Today we have my chat with author K.T. Hoffman, whose debut, a queer baseball rom-com called The Prospects, is out April 9th. K.T. talks about his introduction to genre romance and all the books he wrote before this one, what it is that is so romantic about baseball, and what position he'd play on the Romancelandia fantasy baseball team. Writing a romance with a trans main character who is just a fundamentally optimistic dude, his writing process and his approach to sex scenes, what's so great about the third person present tense, and of course, he shares some books he's loved recently. Before we transition to that conversation, a little about K.T. K.T. Hoffman is an author of queer romance. K.T. is originally from Beaverton, Oregon, and currently lives in Brooklyn. If he isn't writing about trans hope and gay kissing, he's probably white-knuckling his way through the ninth inning of a Seattle Mariners game. And now, through the magic of podcasting, here's my conversation with K.T. Hoffman. Hi, I'm so excited to get to chat. I have been following this book for a long time.
I am so excited to be here. This is one of my favorite podcasts, so it's a thrill to get to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Can we start by talking a little bit about your background in genre romance? Did you read it? Have you been reading it for your whole life? Did you come to it more recently?
So I kind of love listening to a lot of romance authors talk about like that really long history they have of reading romance. I feel like it's very common, the story of like finding a relative's romance novels on their shelves and like reading them. And I love that. I did not grow up reading romance. I very much grew up hiding in like the bookshelves of the YA section at my library, like trying to sneak any book I could find that looked like it might be gay. Like never checking the books out, but like reading them before my parents could find me, like reading them because I was worried I was going to get in trouble. Which obviously, like, there have been queer romance novels for a very long time, but they have not been mainstream until pretty recently.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think, not that, like, I mean, I read a lot of straight books growing up, too, but I guess I didn't ever venture into romance as a category because it felt so separate from the things I was reading. And so it has been, I mean, I say recent, like, it's been quite a few years now, but, like, a more recent thing for me to be getting into romance, and I'm like pretty thrilled to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here. Do you remember what sort of like got you into it? Was there one book where you were like, I'll pick that one up?
Oh man, like I'm sure you've heard a lot of romance authors and like particularly queer romance authors say this, but like Red, White, and Royal Blue was the first one that like when it came out, and the wild thing to me, and I guess this is partly because it's a new adult book, but when I went to a bookstore, I don't even remember how I heard about that book. But when I went to a bookstore in 2019 to pick it up, I was looking in the YA section because I had like, all I heard about it was like, it's gay and it's happy. And I was like, cool, that's YA. Like that, like, I just,
happy
it games, really only,
that's for children.
Yeah, like that really only existed in YA at the time. So I was like looking, I was like, it's not here. Like, where am I supposed to find this? I didn't even know there was a romance section like at the bookstore I was at.
Well, and often there isn't.
Yes. Like it was at Books Are Magic. So they do have a nice little romance section, but many bookstores don't have that. So I didn't know to look for it. And when I found it and I took it home and started reading, I was like, this is not like anything I had read up to that point. And I feel very lucky that now that I'm entering the romance space, there are quite a few more books like that. Like it's not just Casey out here. Like we have a lot more authors writing in this space, but that is the first book that really opened up to me, like, oh, like queer people can be happy in a book and be older than 17. That's wild.
What a world.
What a world.
Okay, so romance you've come to more recently. Have you been a sort of a lifelong writer?
Yes. Yes. So when I was in like elementary school, I used to write like little stories and I would like write them in a pencil and then like staple them together as little booklets. And so I've always written. I started writing more like intensely in high school. I like did NaNoWriMo 6 years in a row from like my freshman year of high school to my like sophomore year of college.
Wow. 'Cause
I was like, I just really need to learn how do you write a book? And then I never revised any of them. I don't even think I read any of them. I was like, it's done and I don't want to look at it because it's bad. So I've always written. And then when I got to be like in my 20s, I started really taking seriously, like trying to not only write the book, but create it into a piece of art that I was like proud of and that I had refined and revised. So writing, yes, revising is more of like an adult experience to me.
Lifelong writer, recent comer to revising.
Yes, which is funny because like now that I'm older, I'm like, I hate drafting. I don't like drafting and I love revising. So I was missing out on the best part for a really long time.
I want to talk a little bit about this book specifically, The Prospects, which I loved so much. And which I think it's funny that you mentioned Red, White, and Royal Blue, because when I read it, I was like, oh, this book has like a Casey McQuiston energy to it.
Thank you.
Which like, I feel like I'm allowed to say because Casey McQuiston has a blurb and it says they completely adored it.
It still kind of blows my mind when I pick the book up, I'm like, whoa.
No, I mean, that's very cool that it was the book that sort of got you into the genre. And then that author is like, I loved this book.
Yeah.
So for folks who haven't had the chance to read it yet, because it isn't out as of this recording, but it will be out April 9th. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, of course. So The Prospects is it's a single point of view, third person romance told from the perspective of Jean Ionescu, who is the first openly trans baseball player in professional baseball. And he plays in the minor leagues in my hometown of Beaverton, Oregon. And it is about his former college teammate, current like quote unquote rival, which I say quote unquote because I always think like the idea of rivalries in sports romances are so fun and like so campy. But his rival gets traded to his team, and it is about them like learning how to not only play together again, but be around each other again and like form, not only like reform the connection that they had in college, but come back to each other now that they're older and like more open with themselves and each other and the relationship and friendship that they form as they like fall in love with each other and try to get their team to the playoffs, because this is a sports romance.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's got some second chance energy. It's got forced proximity. It's technically a workplace. There is like tropes galore happening here, which is super fun. And this is your debut. Which, congrats, exciting.
Thank you so much.
What has the publishing journey been like for you?
Really weird, honestly, like not in a bad way, but I mean, I said earlier, like I wrote so many books, but I never had even tried to get any of them published. The idea didn't fully really cross my mind even. It was something that I did for me because I loved to write, and that was the art that I decided to really dedicate myself to. But I also am a person who really needs deadlines. So I applied to Pitch Wars because, and this is going to sound like so blasé, but I was like, I need a deadline for when like this book has to be written just in case someone requests it. I don't think they're going to, but what if they do?
What is Pitch Wars for people who it doesn't exist anymore?
Yes, which is very sad. So I was in the last class of Pitch Wars. It is a mentorship program where volunteers in various genres across middle grade, young adult, and adult, all agented authors, many of whom are also published, would volunteer to mentor a writer who is unagented in their genre. So when you would apply, you would submit basically a query and a first chapter. And then you would pick four mentors or mentor pairs out of like, I don't know, 40. So you would like pour over their wish list and like try to pick someone who you thought might connect with what you had written. And then they could request it kind of like how an agent requests it. And you would send them the full manuscript and then they would pick one mentee to work with.
Okay. And so you were like, I need to have something ready in case they like request the full manuscript.
So I was like, I'm not embarrassing myself in front of these people. Because a lot of very cool authors are in that program. So I finished my book and then I submitted it and was like, I'm never going to hear back about it ever again, which is fine. Like, that's fine. And then I ended up getting picked. I worked with Ruby Barrett and Rosie Dannon, who I think are like mind-blowingly good romance authors. I am deeply honored to have worked with both of them. And even then, as I was working with them, I didn't really think of it as like, this is me trying to get published. It was me trying to turn this thing that was kind of a baseball book with some romance in it into a real romance novel, which I can't really think of two better people to teach me how does a romance novel really work, because I had read them, but I hadn't studied them. So that was incredibly cool. I probably rewrote like 70% of this book in Pitch Wars. And then I did the showcase because it was kind of like, why not? And then I got some requests and I queried because I was kind of like, if I don't do it now, when I have this push to do it, I am worried I'm never going to. Because, and this is maybe not going to be surprising to you having read this book, but the idea of like trying for a big thing, like the big accomplishment, had really never occurred to me. And so having someone there behind me saying, no, you've worked really hard and you made this thing that like other people might really love and care about, you should try to put it out there, made a huge difference in my life. And so I queried it. I was very lucky to have quite a fast querying experience. And then I went on sub with my wonderful agent, Allison Hunter, about a month after signing with her. And then sub was very, very fast. We had a very charmed experience of all of that. And then we edited with my editor, Katie at Dial.
We love Katie.
I think Katie was on this podcast.
Yeah, Katie was. Katie's so cool.
Katie is the coolest. I mean, I was like a little bit, when I got to meet with her, I was a little bit starstruck because she's so like, every book she edits is incredible.
Yeah.
She's so thoughtful and I think really gets what makes not just queer romance and not just romance or queer literature, but what makes all those things coming together so special. And that meant the world to me. And she's like my dream editor, my dream partner to go through this with. So I was very lucky that she enjoyed the book also. And we sold it to her. And now it's been 2 years and it's finally coming out.
Publishing is slow.
Yes, it's very slow.
That is quite the timeline. So what does it feel like being like about 3 weeks out from your debut release?
I don't know if it's going to hit me until it's like out. It's still, even when I get a copy in the mail, I'm like, oh, that's cool. They like printed a little one-off copy of my book. Like,
yeah, they just printed one. It was just for you. Yeah,
like, it's just like, what a nice thing they did for me. Like, which I don't know. I like have, I grew up writing, but I didn't so much grow up dreaming of like holding my book in my hands or like seeing my name on the cover. I like that never really factored into me. So now that it's happening, I'm like, it sounds made up to me still. Like, it's very odd, but really cool. And I've, every step closer that I get, the more I realize like what a special thing I'm getting to do right now and what a unique moment in my life this is to be 3 weeks out from my first book. That's huge and it's never going to happen again.
Well, I'm excited for you and I'm really excited for everybody to get to read this. We're doing it for book club, I think, in the summer.
I didn't know that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm excited for everyone to read it. I really love picking book club books because when there is something that I love, I just get to be like, ha, 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 I can make everybody read it now.
Now you all have to talk to me about it.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for other people? I know like publishing timelines are so long and 2019 is so long ago now, but you know, Pitch Wars doesn't exist anymore and the querying trenches are a whole other beast. Every year they're different. But like, do you have advice for people who are just starting out writing?
Yeah. I don't even want to pretend that I am any kind of expert on querying. I don't know that an expert on querying like exists because like you said, it changes every year. I think I was monumentally lucky with the timing that, like, the time that I was submitting this book to agents was a time when I was just late enough that the idea of a romance novel with a trans character, like, didn't bother most people I was querying, but early enough that it was still, like, new. And so I think that, and also, like, the sports romances were starting to pick up, but not huge yet. I was very lucky with timing, and I don't want to pretend like I know how I managed that, because I don't. But I do think if you're going to try to get something traditionally published, and maybe that's not, that doesn't have to be everyone's goal. I think it's good to know what you want out of publishing and what you want out of writing, because I don't regret all the books that I wrote and didn't try to get published. I'm really happy that those stories, like, exist, even if they only exist for me. But I think whatever your goal is with publishing, you have to, you don't have to enjoy every minute of it, but there has to be, like, some core at the center of whatever you're working on that means something to you. And, like, when I was writing this book, I didn't think that a trans romance was something anyone would want to read or publish. But I knew I really wanted to read it. And I really wanted to talk about baseball all the time because I just, like, love it. So it was, even the parts that were really hard were still fun to sit down and work on. And I think often the best books come from someone who just has, like, an unhinged passion for something and, like, they just really want to talk about it. And I think that is the thing about my book that I am the most proud of, is that, like, it is something I am just extremely passionate about. Also, if you're writing romance, I think you should try to be in love with your characters, just, like, a little bit, at least. Like, I am fully in love with Jean and with Louise. I'm like, they are my best friends. They are my husbands. I love them. Like, they are my sons. I think it's important when you're writing romance to really love those characters, because you're trying to get other people to love them too. And you're trying to have them love each other. And that's, I don't know, that's what fuels it for me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, if you don't love them, how is anyone else going to love them?
Right? Who else is going to love my strange children but me?
I can tell. I mean, I also sort of know that you really love baseball, but, like, you can tell from reading this book that the baseball wasn't just, like, an incidental setting for you, that, like, this is indeed really a baseball book. Although, I caveat for everyone, I think you can read it if you're not a baseball person.
I hope so.
I am a baseball person, so as much as you are, but I was like, oh, this is so fun. I know about this sport.
Yeah.
I, like, understand this reference, but I don't think that you need that to read it. However, you mentioned that you had hit, like, the sort of the beginning of this wave of sports romance hysteria. What is it, do you think, about the world of sports that lends itself so well to genre romance?
Yeah. Okay, well, first I have to ask who your baseball team is.
Okay, the Dodgers. I'm sorry, I'm from LA.
It's fine. It's fine. If you were, like, the Angels, I'd be like...
No, I'm sorry. They're the Angels of Los Angeles. Absolutely
Thank
not.
You.
No.
Thank you so much.
No.
You get it.
No, absolutely not.
Also, the Mariners are, like... The Mariners are in a division with the Angels, so I, like, have beef with them. But I'm like, if you're from Los Angeles, of course you're a Dodgers fan. You and Luis, like...
Exactly. No, exactly. I'm from LA. My dad is from LA. He remembers when the Dodgers came to LA. Like,
there's history there.
I'm by it, honestly.
Yes. I'm from Oregon, and really, like, the Mariners are the only team up there, even though they're obviously not in Oregon. But I'm like, I feel like it would have a little bit been a betrayal if I had, like, not rooted for the Mariners. Okay, but to go back to your actual question, what is it about sports? I think sports are very communal. That, like, act of cheering a team or an athlete on is so similar to, like, the way that we cheer on characters in a romance.
Interesting.
I also think that sports are so much about, like, winning and loss and, like, the huge emotions that come out of that. Like, we love to make, and rightfully so, we love to make fun of, like, men yelling at the TV they're watching a sports game. I'm like, that's fair. If I ever get really angry at a sports game, I'm like, I need to walk away. Like, it's not worth it. This is supposed to be fun. But I think that's very real. Like, you get so attached to a sports team, and it can really carry you through moments in your life that are so hard. I've talked to people who are going through real grief or loss in their lives, and they're like, but my, like, watching this team was grounding to me. I started watching baseball quite late in life, actually. And I started watching it the summer I came out, like, started to come out as trans. Like, it was a long process, but I started to come out as trans the same summer I started watching baseball. And, like, you know, that's a very unmooring feeling. I had also just graduated college. So I, like, it's a lot of change.
That's a lot all at once.
It was a lot all at once. But, like, every night, because baseball plays every day, almost every night, I could sit down and be like, for the next 3 hours, I'm just going to hang out with my friends, the Seattle Mariners. It's, I don't know if you know that meme that's like the person sitting next to like a picture of three people and they're like eating cereal or something. And they're like, this is what it feels like to listen to podcasts. That's how I feel watching sports. I'm like my good friend, Mitch Haniger from the Mariners, who I know personally, even though obviously like Mitch Haniger has no idea who I am. I think that that is really unique about sports. I think that the big emotions also lend themselves really well to romance, which is a genre that, like, this is one of my favorite things about it, really revels in big emotions and doesn't try to, like, hide those. It's one of the best parts of romance. You get to enjoy all those big sweeping motions, and I think that's really similar to sports.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. I'm thinking about how there's also sort of jokes about how, like, men won't talk to their friends, but they will, like, go, like, play basketball or whatever, like, yeah, go play golf with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. It's because, like, the connection between sports and emotions is, like, really present in all aspects of, like, sporting.
Yeah, like, I have not played a sport in a very long time, and I still, like, when the Mariners made the playoffs for the first time in 21 years, I was like running laps around my apartment. Like, I personally had been there and like contributed to it as if like me watching the game at 1 a.m. matters to them. I don't know. Like, it's just that celebration is really special and I think very human.
Baseball is not currently the most popular of the sports for sports romance. Is hockey is like the thing right now. Yes. But your book is not the only baseball book coming out this year. There's a slew of them. I think baseball's like really coming from behind here, trying to like take the sports romance attention. What is it about baseball specifically that like that you love so much that is so much fun?
First, I do feel very spoiled that there's like multiple baseball books coming out this year, because when I started querying, I was warned by multiple people. They're like, okay, sports romance is a thing, but baseball romance is not a thing.
It really was not a thing. It was not.
Because it's so American. And I think publishers sometimes are like, well, that's not going to have like a broad enough audience. It also has a reputation for being boring, which is...
It's non-contact.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Move slowly.
Yes. But I actually think that's one of the things that makes it so good for romance, is that like, to me, the best romance plays on that like tension and release of a relationship. And baseball is so much about that. Like, there are all, I don't know, like, I'm going to explain what small ball is. You probably know what small ball is, but not everyone will. When a baseball team like hits a lot of singles, which is when you get only one base off of a hit, rather than like a home run where you get four and you get a run. When you hit a lot of singles or you take a lot of walks or you steal bases, it's often called small ball because you're not really scoring on those plays. You are just moving the game forward and trying to move towards like scoring a run. And I think I like to think a lot of the time when I'm writing romance and I'm like laying these seeds at the beginning that I'm like playing small ball, is that like you have to have those moments, because every moment can't be a home run. Every moment in your romance novel can't be like the first kiss or like the love confession. You have to have the like Darcy clenching his hand moments where it's like, we know, and like the tension is building so that the release can be satisfying. And I think baseball lends itself to that so much better than almost any other sport because it's slow and because you have to pay attention and you have to notice the details and be like savvy. And I think that just like doesn't exist in sports where everyone, I mean, it does. You have to be savvy in any sport. But other sports, there's so much movement happening all the time. In baseball, I'm like, I don't know. I love watching a game and seeing the first baseman just like chatting with the guy from the other team who's like on first. I love it. Like, it is a sport about connection and patience. And I think that is really unique to baseball.
I agree. I can't think of another sport that is like that.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about cricket. I understand it takes place over weeks.
I don't either. I grew up playing soccer, so I'm like, the amount of running they made me do, and I was really bad at it. Like, I know that it's not soccer.
It's definitely not soccer. Soccer involves a lot of running.
Yes, and I was very bad at it.
Okay, I imagine this is something you have thought a lot about. If you were a baseball player, what position would you play, and why?
Okay, so I did not play baseball at all growing up, which surprises people sometimes, but it wouldn't surprise you if you've seen my hand-eye coordination. I'm really short. I'm 5'1". And so just based on stature, I think I'm kind of stuck with catcher or second baseman because those are like the short guy positions. The like jokes online are always like, your best athlete is shortstop and your shortest athlete is second base. But I am also not very fast. And I think I also am like the person who did all the work in a group project, which I think is very common amongst writers. So that is very catcher energy to me because the catcher calls the game. They don't always get like a ton of credit for it, which sounds like I'm being like, people don't give me enough credit, but I don't like when people look at me. I think catcher is maybe my dream baseball position. I'm like, don't look at me, but also let me make all the decisions.
Yeah, you get to wear a mask. No one can even see you.
Right? And I'm like, you get all the cool padding, which in my opinion is like, that's the hottest baseball uniform. I want to be that guy.
All right. Well, catcher it is on the like romance fantasy baseball roster.
Thank you.
You touched on this earlier, but this book is like very queer. It's a gay romance. One of the characters is trans. He's like the first trans player in Major League Baseball. How did you find these two people as your main characters?
Okay. This is maybe it's really common. I generally come up with characters before I come up with a plot for a book. So I was like, as I was thinking about this book, I knew I kind of wanted to like write a baseball book because I'd been doing research for a different book. And then long story, I was like, I need a break from this. So I started watching baseball. I got really into it. I'm like, no, I think I need to write about baseball, actually. But I had been kind of toying with these other characters who I sort of wanted to write about. And like Jean and Luis were two of those characters. And they were amongst a cast of like eight people, but they were my favorites. And then I was like, maybe I can just make them be the main characters instead of being like supporting characters to this other, like more broader cast book. And this book went through so many different versions, not all of which got a full draft. Like at one point it took place in the 60s. And then at another point it was like, they were in college for the first half of the book and then not for the second half. And it just went through a lot of iterations, most of which did not get a full draft because, you know, they didn't work. I realized that early on. But I knew I wanted to write about Jean and Luis before I necessarily knew like this was a book about minor league baseball. I knew they were baseball players, but I didn't know how much that was going to be the center of the book or in what way it was going to factor into the book. But I really fell in love with them both because like Jean was so unlike any trans character I'd read in anything. I mean, to be fair, in 2018, which is when I started working on this book, I had maybe read like two trans characters.
No, but I mean, I think really in 2018, right, like publishing, particularly for like queer romances, has shifted, like traditional publishing of queer romances has shifted really rapidly in the last like 5 or 6 years. I don't think there were traditionally published romances with trans characters in 2018.
No, I don't, like, I'm even trying to think of more than maybe a tiny handful of books that were traditionally published and not romance novels.
Yeah.
Like, in any genre. Because trans characters became quite common. I could say common. They're still not common. Comparatively.
Relatively speaking, compared to zero.
Compared to zero, trans characters became more, like, accepted and common in YA. I think right around when, like, Aidan Thomas came out with Cemetery Boys, which also was one of the first. Like, that book also made a huge impact on me. But, like, it's still an adult traditional publishing. There's not very many trans characters in romance novels. Like, it's quite rare.
No, there really aren't. We're not being overwhelmed by trans characters here. Yeah.
God, I would love to be. I would love for there to be so many, like, trans romances that I can't read all of them. That would be wild.
Yeah, which really, like, actually isn't, like, there are definitely too many hockey romances to read. It's very doable to have so many of something that you can't read it. Romance is a really big genre. But yeah, there's definitely, if you wanted to read all of the books this year traditionally published with a trans main character in genre romance, like, you could do that pretty easily. It's not that many.
You could do it. Yes. And then, so, like, within those trans characters, I feel like I didn't get to see, like, a character who's, like, to me, the defining feature of Jean is optimism and, like, joy. Like, Jean very much exudes enthusiasm for things. Like, he's got big opinions and, like, in a positive way. Like, I think I have big opinions and a lot of them are that I want to gripe about things. But, like, Jean has a lot of enthusiasm for things. And I think most trans characters, the, like, defining features, even in really sympathetic portrayals of trans people, the defining features are often, like, discomfort and bad things. It's just, like, it's hard. And that's fair. I am a trans person. I live in this world and I understand why we are often written that way. But I also, some of the, like, funniest people I've ever met in my life are trans people. We are very funny. I love that. And we also tend to be, like, creative, and I don't know. I really wanted to show a trans person who was, like, no, I'm just going to go out there and, like, really love this thing with my whole heart, even if it's not where I'm supposed to be or where I've been told I'm allowed to be. I'm just going to take my tiny little corner of it, and I'm going to really love that. And I wanted to, like, I love how he pairs with Luis, because Luis both, like, really belongs in a baseball world. Like, his dad was a baseball player, like, a very famous one. He is a cis man. He's, like, very good at his sport. And it was never really a question of, like, whether he'd get to play. But he also, like, he has really bad anxiety. He is not built like a baseball player. Like, that was really important to me, is that neither of these men are, like, built like athletes. And he's, like, quiet, and also he isn't white, and white athletes tend to receive infinitely more judgment from heavily white baseball fan bases than would their white counterparts. So it was important to me that, like, they would be coming to this relationship, even if they're not experiencing the same things, they're both feeling like this space both was and was not made for me. And I think the way that that plays off of each other was really fruitful for me. And that's, like, why they are who they are. And then also just, like, they have always been really good friends who, like, are really fun to watch talk to each other and goof around with each other. And they have such different personalities, but they're also, like, at their hearts, like, very silly men. I really, like, loved that and wanted that core of, like, joking around to be in this book, because baseball is like that. If you watch baseball players have 5 minutes of free time, they're doing something silly.
I love that. Yeah, I feel like Jean is someone where I was like, if I had to be on a team, which I should never be, you want Jean on your team.
Yeah.
He's the best possible dude to have on team sport team.
Every year MLB will, like, ask, like, who's the nicest infielder to, like, chat with? while you're on the bases. And in my head, I'm like, I wanted to write the guy who, like, you would answer him in a heartbeat. Like, he's the guy who you're like, oh, I want to hit a double because I want to go hang out with Gene.
Yeah. I feel like you succeeded. That is for sure the vibe.
That means a lot to me. Thank you.
You mentioned that Luis, who's not the point of view character, but the, like, romantic interest, struggles a lot with anxiety. How did you approach writing that? I mean, right, you aren't in his point of view, but it's, like, a pretty significant part of the narrative. What was your approach to writing that?
So, I mean, I have anxiety. So I don't think it was ever, I don't think I ever started this book feeling like, how do I write about anxiety? Because I mean, Gene also, like, it's not as much of a part of the book, but Gene does will also mention occasionally in this book that, like, he also has anxiety and has experienced, which I think it'd be kind of impossible for either of these men to be in that kind of spotlight and, like, not having anxiety.
First trans player in Major League Baseball, not a concern in the world.
Right?
Like, what would that be like? That would be great.
No big deal. It's like, I don't know really that many authors who are like, I never feel anxious about sharing my writing with people. Like, what? But so, like, that, I don't think it was ever a question of how do I write a character with anxiety, because I think it would be harder for me to write a character who doesn't have anxiety.
That's a deeply millennial thing to say.
Right? Like, so I'm, like, right on the, like, lower cusp of millennial, and I'm like, no, but I am one, because, like, I have the neuroses of a millennial. But I think there is a really big difference between writing anxiety from the POV character and writing anxiety from outside, because we get to see the way Gene's brain is working. Even if it's not first person, it is from Gene's perspective, and we get to, like, know kind of how he's feeling and the nuances, whereas with Luis, he has to, and it's, this is, I set myself up for this because I wrote the book, but I'm like, you have to be able to portray how he's feeling, which can only mostly come from dialogue, because I don't want Gene putting words in Luis's mouth. But also, Luis is much less talkative than Gene. So he's not like taciturn or anything, but he's much more understated. So you have to show it through both his body language and his reactions to things. And then that's also where, like, Gene also having anxiety comes in, because he can see the way Luis is reacting and be like, oh, I recognize that. I know how that feels to, like, the way he's, like, he looks right now. He's really sweaty because he's anxious. Like, I know how that feels. But then also, like, sometimes when you write characters, at least this is how I have experienced in other books sometimes, when a character has anxiety, it can become their defining feature. And I think it is the biggest part of Luis's character arc in this book. But you do also want to show them, like, what makes them not anxious? Like, when do they feel comfort and joy? And, like, it was so important to me to show the, like, huge disparity between how Luis feels when people are looking at him and he's, like, supposed to be a public figure in some way, and when he gets to be alone with Gene, or, like, just with a few guys on the team who he feels safe with. And I think that is really emblematic of anxiety to me, is you're not, even if, like, anxiety is a constant thing, of course, like, I don't think I need to tell most people that, but, like, you're not always in crisis mode when you have anxiety. And so I wanted to show the two, like, ends of the spectrum for him and see, like, the, like, joy and pride Gene kind of gets to feel when he, like, notices that Luis is genuinely comfortable. I don't know. That is one of the best parts of writing that character to me, is, like, how do we put him in a scenario where he feels good?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because there's a romance trope that is, like, very, it's, like, almost silly, but it's almost similar to that, which is, like, the one character can only sleep when the other one is there. Like, yeah. Oh, I, like, can never sleep, but, like, when you're here, like, I can, yeah, always, like, I get a great night's sleep. But it is kind of, I mean, it is like a version of anxiety, right? Where, yeah, it's like, well, I'm anxious, but not when I'm with you.
Yes. Or, like, when he's experiencing anxiety, like, and Gene is there, it's different than when he's, like, I don't want to, like, spoil scenes that are in the book, but, like, when he's experiencing anxiety and Gene is there, it's, like, something that he still has to work through and that he needs to, like, Gene can't heal his anxiety for him. That's not how anxiety works. But there is something to be said for having a support system and someone that you really trust behind you. And it was important to me that Luis got to in this book, because he's kind of alone when the book starts. Like, he gets traded with another player and he knows that player, but they're not very close. Whereas Gene has this whole like team who he knows and feels close to. And it was fun to show Luis getting to build his support system and like lean on what was already there and gain new support and realize that like that's allowed.
Being traded to a team, I had not thought about this, but like a thing that I truly like, one of my worst case scenarios is when I'm new in a situation where everyone else knows each other.
Uh-huh.
And that is like being traded to a baseball team, but like times a trillion. Like, yes. They work together, they know, yes, each other, they've been on the same team. You're from a different team. Yes. And now you have to like join their team. Oh God, what a nightmare.
Like genuinely, there was like 2 seconds when I was first drafting this book where I was like, well, maybe should like Gene get traded to Luis's team? I was like, no, that's a completely different book. Like, that is such a I don't think Gene would like getting traded. And I think he needs to have like, Vince has to be there for Gene's story to really make sense. But like, he could make it work. Whereas Luis is like, this is my worst nightmare. And it has now happened to me I think 4 times. Like, Luis has gotten traded over and over. So he's gotten to this point where he's like, actually, baseball might be terrible. I think I might hate it here. And getting traded to be on like a team with a guy who he knows and who used to be a real comfort to him, but Gene very blatantly being unhappy with him when he gets there. So he's like, oh, the one familiar thing that's here is like not something I have access to right now. And that is like Luis's nightmare scenario and also my nightmare scenario.
I want to talk a little bit about like the writing of this book. What is your writing process like? And is it different from book to book? Has it shifted?
It's definitely different from book to book because I'm drafting book 2 right now and it is completely a completely different experience than drafting this. I tend to historically write just like garbage first. Like, people will be like, no, you're exaggerating. I'm like, no, like, I am very critical of myself. And also, I think they're quite bad. Like, the first draft of this book, Gene was like kind of a bummer. Like, I also like had come out super recently and was like still processing that. And so I don't think I was ready to write a really happy trans character yet. But I do, I also like, right now I'm drafting in, I wrote most of this draft in winter. So I think this book is like sadder than it's going to end up being. Like, because like the sun is coming out and I'm like, everything, the last 70,000 words I've written have been sad because it was dark out. But I write really messy first drafts, but I genuinely love revising. I think a lot of people, I think, maybe do this, but after I finish a first draft, I will like re-outline the book because I try to outline for a first draft, but it tends to go by the wayside. Like, the outline is a suggestion for my first draft because I often don't know exactly what I'm writing until I've written it. And then I write it and I'm like, oh, see it now. And then I outline it much more in depth. And my favorite like thing to point out is there's only one line in the prospect's final copy that was in the first draft. Like, there's one sentence and I can point it out. Hopefully every book won't be quite that much rewriting, but I love to rewrite and I love that part. And that's when I think the characters start to feel like themselves and their voices start to feel separate from each other instead of just like versions of me talking on the page, saying what I think maybe I want them to say. And that's my favorite part. And then I get really nitpicky at the end about everything. I am very much a reviser.
This book you mentioned is written in the third person. It's written in the third person present tense.
Yeah.
Which is not super common.
No.
I am a big fan of this like really niche thing that most people don't care about or pay any attention to. It's a favorite Casey McQuiston tense, mm-hmm, and person combination. How did you end up there?
I have 2 reasons. And one is just my like knee jerk. This is why I think I write this way. And this is like, then I have one that's more niche for this book. I think a lot of people who grew up writing fan fiction write like this. because I think third person present is a pretty common tense in fan fiction. I know Casey wrote fan fiction before. And I think that it is a lot more common there. First person is like not really a thing. If I saw first person in fan fiction, I was closing out of that tab.
Oh, interesting.
It's just not as much of a thing. I don't know why present tense is more common in fan fiction than it is in fiction, though. That is what I tended to read then. And that is a lot of how I learned to write was like, I started writing fan fiction, like Percy and Annabeth fan fiction when I was like 12. And then like realized that you could make fan fiction gay when I got older. So I was like, even better. But that is partly why I think some people write in third person present, but then there are people who write like this book is not influenced by fan fiction at all, but there are books that are, and those aren't always in third person present. So maybe that theory is complete garbage. I don't know. That's just my theory. And then for this book, I think it was a craft choice. Like even though I know it's not the most common tense to write and is just kind of my natural way of writing, I also consciously wanted to keep it that way because that is how sports announcers talk.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Then there are like little sections of sports announcers in this book, but I love I love sports announcers. Like the epigraph for this book is part of a call of a Mariners game. Like I think sports announcers are so cool. The improv needed to be a good sports announcer is incredible to me. But for this book particularly, I was like, I want, especially when I'm writing about baseball games and like sex scenes, which are very similar kinds of writing, actually. Like they're very body focused. I wanted it to feel like you were like in the moment with them and like you could experience those feelings. And I didn't want the disconnect of past tense. I wanted it to feel like we are watching it happen in real time. And like, even if it's not in first person, we're like, we get to see it as it's happening. And I think that's really hard to accomplish with past tense. And I also just, the third person was like, it's sports announcers. Like sports announcers aren't like, I just hit a single, like, you know?
Yeah. But I think, I mean, right, it's sports announcing feels very immediate because the point of it, right, yes. If you're listening to the game on the radio or whatever, is to like, feel like you are there watching it.
Yes.
And it has a similar effect, I think, in fiction, which is that it feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels very immediate, which I enjoy.
Yeah. And like, especially on radio, when you're just hearing the words and you don't get to watch, it's like painting a picture. I don't know. Like, I think radio announcing and like audiobooks are quite similar. And I wanted it to feel like that. And it's a very special like tone in which to write in, I think.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned like the sort of similarities between writing like a baseball scene and a sex scene. Yeah. And I'm always really interested in writers' approach to sex scenes. I come from a theater background, so I always think of it as like, you know, does this like, why are we having this like staged intimacy? Like, is it gratuitous? Mm-hmm. Why do we need it? What's important about it?
Yeah.
How do you approach writing sex scenes?
So I think... Okay, first, I think sex scenes can do a lot of different things, which I think is really cool. They're very unique. This is not a dig at erotica, but I was not trying to write erotica. I think an erotica sex scene is completely different from a romance novel sex scene. And so when I'm writing it, I'm trying to, in each scene, show like, what are they physically doing? Because sometimes like, you don't want a sex scene where you get distracted wondering like, does this person have three hands? Like what's happening? I don't ever want people to get distracted by the like physical blocking in like a sex scene. I want it to be clear what's happening. But then also you have to like layer in the emotional experience of it. And I think I get like, I will have people tease me sometimes because my characters are always laughing and like talking during sex scenes. Like I write a lot of dialogue in sex scenes, but that's like, to me, the easiest way to show an emotional experience that the characters are having in that scene is like, A, to have them talk to each other and to show very clearly how are they reacting to the thing that the other person is doing. And not just physically, but like like for Gene in this book, he is a trans man. And I really didn't ever want the sex scenes in this book to be like hyper focused on his transness. But I also didn't want to shy away from that, which is a choice like some people when they write trans characters in romance will like never mention their genitalia. That's fine. Like that is a choice. And I think like a lot of writers have done that really elegantly. And I was like, it just didn't feel true to who Gene is because Gene is very comfortable in himself. I was like, I just kind of want to write a sex scene where like a trans guy gets to feel as like celebratory about his body as cis characters get to. And I wanted to write like realistically, okay, neither of these men has dated a ton because of the way their lives have been. Gene has only dated other trans men because a lot of trans people mostly date other trans people. And then like Luis has only really had one boyfriend and his other boyfriend was cis. But I didn't want it to be like clumsy, like, oh, I'm so nervous. So it's like, when I wrote these sex scenes, I was like, I want it to be clear that they trust each other. And that's all that matters, really, is that they're coming to this experience and trusting each other. And so from a craft perspective, I'm like, how do I show that in the ways they are talking and acting towards each other? And that is why, like, they communicate, not just about like consent. They're like teasing each other during sex scenes and like, because that's how they talk normally. And I wanted it to feel like a natural progression of who they are as people and the dynamic that already existed between them. So it would just kind of seem like, and this is a new thing they're doing together, but they are still who they are.
Like baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the hardest scene for you to write in this book?
Okay. I mean, my impulse is to say the first scene because I had to rewrite it like 8 times. This book originally opened in spring training and I had to like cut a bunch of that because spring training is very like inside baseball. The average fan does not care about spring training. Most people are not like me who are like pressing their face against the metaphorical window of Major League Baseball. Like, I need you to show me a baseball player in February or I'll die. So I originally took place in spring training and I got the very good advice that like most people, yeah, I was going to lose a lot of people if I talked that much about baseball. I also find the breakup really hard. Breakups are always hard. Any fight is really hard to write for me because I hate conflict and I tend to write characters who also hate conflict. But I think the actual like technical most hard scene to write in this book was probably like the first time you see them playing baseball. It's a very short scene and it used to be longer and it's now very short. And it's because I think sports, understandably, have a reputation for being exclusionary, especially towards the exact sort of people who often gravitate towards reading romance. So like people who aren't cishet men often feel really excluded from sports spaces, especially men's sports. And I knew that that was going to be a barrier for a lot of people. And I didn't want to perpetuate that feeling of like outsiderness that, I mean, I felt. I love baseball. Watch it constantly. And I still sometimes get nervous that like, I haven't watched it my whole life. What if someone like thinks that I'm a hack and I don't know what I'm talking about? Because like, I am a trans gay man. That's not who you expect to be like a passionate baseball fan. I didn't want readers to feel like that. And also just technically, I'm like, there's a lot of baseball terms that are niche that like you kind of have to use to describe what's happening. But you also don't want like people to get super bogged down in that. So there was like a constant back and forth in every round of edits of this book, trying to find that sweet spot of like, this is not so much baseball that people will feel like this isn't a space for them. But enough baseball that people who enjoy it and like are reading this book because they like baseball, like will feel like comfortable here. Like it's a realistic portrayal of this thing they love. And I think I'm especially sensitive to that, knowing that I have read a lot of romance novels that I, as a trans person, did not feel were for me or like had considered me. I didn't want people to feel like that about the baseball in this book or anything. But like, I don't want to perpetuate that feeling. So I was like very nervous about it.
I mean, I follow baseball not as much as you, but I felt like I could follow what was happening.
Thank you.
And like was given enough information to like understand why I should be invested in it. Like when you're watching a cooking show and you're not really a cook, but you're like, oh my God, you use that kind of basil? Like
Like I really admire people who like write cooking. I think I am about cooking the way a lot of people are about sports, where I'm like, I like it. I'm do it for myself. But I'm like not a passionate chef or anything. So I can't write about it on a technical level. But yeah, like I want someone to be able to pick up this book and know absolutely nothing about baseball. And like, even if they didn't want to Google every term that's in it, they can still experience it on an emotional level. The way you can go to a ballpark and not know anything that's happening on the field and still feel like you're a part of like the people experiencing it together.
Yeah. What was your favorite scene to write?
Literally any scene where Gene and Louise are just talking to each other. Like dialogue is my favorite thing to write. Sometimes I will write a scene and I like just write the dialogue and then I fill in all the rest later because I'm like, I just want to write some people talking to each other. And I really like how they particularly like play off of each other. And I think in particular, I think the scene, this is like early enough on that I'm hoping it's not like a spoiler, but there's a scene where they're like sitting in a diner and they're like sort of friends. Again, but like not quite, and they're getting to know each other. And I like loved writing that scene and getting to show them being like tentative with each other. And then in the next chapter, when they're a little bit closer and they're like, okay, I think we are friends. And they're like, they sit in Luis's car and they talk and they like open up a lot more. And I loved writing the scene in Luis's car because they like talk about very serious things. And then they also, I think like, the silliest joke in the book is in that chapter. Like they're within like three paragraphs of each other. And I think that is just really fun and very emblematic of who Gene and Luis are together. So any scene where I got to play with that was my favorite scene.
I really loved their dynamic together. It's like very fun to read.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's next from you or what you're working on now if it's not like full embargoed?
It is another rom-com. And it is also about a gay trans man.
Fantastic. Off to a great start.
Can definitely say that. I don't even think I'm under full embargo to talk about what it's about. But I get really nervous because I'm like, so my books tend to be about 100,000 words. I'm about 80,000 words into drafting right now, which is maybe the scariest part to be because it's when I've realized I'm going to have to rewrite this whole thing. But I think I know what it's about now. But it is not about baseball players. So anyone who saw this book and was like, oh God, baseball, hopefully will be interested in the next one. And sorry to people who only came here for the baseball. It's not about baseball players. It is about like very regular guys. It is like a roommate romance about very normal people.
Well, before I let you go, everyone obviously will read The Prospects. But when they're like, oh no, he has no backlist, where should I go next? Can you recommend a book or two that you have read and loved recently?
Yes. Okay. If you want to read more baseball romance, Alicia Thompson has one coming out in June, which might be one of the ones you were talking about baseball romances that are coming out this year. And I was talking earlier about that like tension and release of a baseball game. And I think like Alicia is so masterful with that. It blows my mind. She's so good. That book is incredible. And if you love baseball, it's like all the best parts of baseball without you needing to be like an expert. If you want really nitty gritty baseball, Katie Casey, of course, naturally. Anything Katie has written is like some of the smartest baseball writing you will ever experience in your life. Anita Kelly has How You Get the Girl, of course, one of my favorite sports romances and just like books of this year. It really embraces that basketball is for queer women. And I love that about it. It's a gorgeous book and like so tender in that way that I think only Anita can really do. Incredible. And then if you don't want sports, which I'm like, okay, that's fair. I finally read Isabel Conyers' sophomore novel, Vampires of El Norte, this winter, which I say finally, it was like 6 months after it came out, which I think only to an author would that seem like. It took me forever. But I finally sat down and read it. It is one of the most like romantic things I have ever read in my life. It's so atmospheric and gorgeous and like just on a sentence level, stunning. And like, I have never cared so much about a straight man in my life. Like, stunning, gorgeous. I never wanted it to end. That is one of the most romantic things I've ever read. So those are my three that I will plug here. Oh, I was four.
Really fantastic recs, like across the board. Great choices. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
And there you have it. A huge thank you to Katie Hoffman for hitting one out of the park. If this conversation has made you want to pick up a copy of The Prospects, you can do that in our shop or on our website, meetcutebookshop.com. It will also be our Queer Romance Book Club pick this May, so if you're local, come chat about it. And if you've been enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review it on the podcast listening platform of your choosing. Or you could share about it on social media. That works too. It helps other people find us, and that helps us keep making podcasts. That's all for this episode of the Meet Cute Book Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop in San Diego, California, and I hope you'll tune back in for more deep dives into romance writing, reading, and publishing.